dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the War of Ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host. We are going to be squaring you about the battle space of the war for the free world, but I'm not going to waste the time of our first guest introducing those that will come later. Let me jump right into it with Ambassador John Bolton, the former U.S. representative to the United Nations, a man who has served his government and our country in a number of other capacities and is currently at the American Enterprise Institute. He is also the author of Surrender is Not an Option and innumerable superb pieces in the various publications of our day. Mr. Ambassador, a lot to talk with you about, and I'm grateful for you coming back. Thanks for being with us.
Always glad to be with you.
Let's start with the byplay between the Republican candidate for President Mitt Romney, who made a major address on foreign policy last week, and the White House, that has taken considerable exception to his suggestion that this president doesn't really want the United States to be the preeminent power in the world. I suspect you come down rather closer to the Romney position on this, but just against the prism of what is happening around the world at the moment, John Bolton, what are we to make of the administration's claims that the president has done a just indisputably brilliant job of foreign policy?
Well, it's been a wretched 2.5 years for American national security across a whole range of fronts. And it's part, I think, of the president's focus on restructuring our domestic economy that leads him really not to pay adequate attention to threats to our national security. I think what the administration is trying to do is build up a narrative that a couple of good decisions to kill Osama bin Laden, to kill al-Awlaki, and some others constitute success in foreign policy. And while those individually are significant events and the president deserves our praise for carrying them out, they hardly amount to a policy or a strategy of keeping America safe. Indeed, what makes them so stand out so much is precisely that they run so counter to the character of the rest of the administration's policy. And there, I think, Governor Romney was right on target in identifying the risk of American decline because of the administration's indecisiveness and weakness in its characterization of America's role in the world.
Right. Let's get down to some specifics. You have written quite critically about the administration's handling of the Libya matter. Things are not going swimmingly in Egypt, most recently with heightening of the attacks against the Christian community there, the Copts. Syria has also received some critical scrutiny by you as to what the administration is doing. Where is this Middle East policy leading us at the moment, John Bolton, and not least with respect to our friends in Israel?
Well, I'm not at all sure the administration has a Middle East policy. I'm not sure it has much of a foreign policy at all, and I think that's consistent with the debate over America's decline. I don't think the president's bothered by American decline, in part because he thinks we deserve it, and in part because he's just not paying attention. The Middle East is certainly a good example of that. I favored removing Gaddafi from power, but it was obviously on the condition that we had some plan in mind for a successor regime. That is manifestly not happening in Libya. The risk of chaos or even worse, a radical jihadist regime coming to power there remains a real possibility. In Egypt, you mentioned the riots against the Coptic Christians. There are reports that recent reports that over 100,000 Coptic Christians have left Egypt permanently because of their fear for what might happen there. That's not just an abstract prediction. That's people voting with their feet. We've seen in Syria now something in the range of 2,700 civilians killed by this regime and their Iranian sponsors. So things are not going well with the Arab Spring, I think in part because it was always overrated, but also because the radical elements that exist in the populations of these different countries are emerging, and either people in this country didn't understand them adequately before or ignored them, and certainly the administration hasn't provided any coherent response to this point.
Mm. On Libya, John Bolton, we're listening to, among others, the U.S. spokesman and NATO, well, I guess bragging, really, about the splendid job that NATO has done there. I wonder what your sense will be of the this with a slightly longer view of history, given how long it took for the NATO forces to bring about essentially the overthrow of the Gaddafi government, the fact that al-Qaeda and the Muslim Brotherhood seem likely to succeed, and that there may be as many as 20,000 surface-to-air missiles that have gone, as they say, missing at the moment.
Well, this is not a triumph for NATO. This is an embarrassment for NATO that it took 6 months to defeat this tin-horned dictator who is still not apprehended, still at large, still potentially causing trouble. And I very much fear that the whole Obama administration approach, leading from behind, not doing what we might have done to bring about the swift demise of Gaddafi's regime, spare everybody the human cost, and leave us in a better position to fashion a successor regime that's favorable to the United States. All of this is going to go down as something that I think has the potential to grievously harm NATO because of its impairment of NATO's credibility, not just in the Middle East, but around the world.
Yeah. Let me turn to another topic that has taken on particular urgency, it seems to me, with the reported interest of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee Chairman, John Kerry, to move forward with the consideration by the Senate and ratification by the United States of a very controversial treaty called the Law of the Sea Treaty. You and your colleague at AEI, Dan Blumenthal, wrote a very powerful piece in the Wall Street Journal opposing this idea. Give us the short course on what's wrong with LOST and why it should not be, in fact, approved by the Senate.
Well, there are a lot of reasons to be against it, in particular now the disadvantage it would put the United States in what may be our emerging confrontation with China over control of the South China Sea and the other waters adjacent to China, where the Law of the Sea Treaty is being used by some, like China, to try and exclude the United States Navy from international waters and engaging in legitimate military activities, including intelligence and surveillance of what's going on the Chinese mainland. And the idea that we would ratify a treaty that's so ambiguous, stating that benignly, that China and others can use it to our disadvantage, I just think is unacceptable. I'm hoping that, again, by raising people's awareness of the deficiencies of these treaties, that we can finally put it in its grave. You know, we thought in the Reagan administration that he had stopped it, but it keeps emerging from those who have a view of the merits of global governance. They keep bringing it up. It's a behind-the-scenes way of getting into the environmental, international environmental regulation and a whole host of other things. People need to be alert to this to try and stop it. I hope we've done that now for the rest of this year. But this treaty has a way of getting up out of its grave.
Yeah, it's the zombie, I think. And your effort, your efforts to put a spike in it are most appreciated. I specifically because, as you know so well, Ambassador John Bolton, from your time at the United Nations, as well as your coverage of public policy from various other vantage points at the State Department and the Justice Department, among others, there is this phenomenon of lawfare, and it seems that this would be a fantastic new platform for waging it against us.
No, it opens all kinds of vistas, including the creation, a little noticed, I might say, of a new international tribunal like most of these tribunals, sees no limit to its jurisdiction whatever, even in some of its early initial decisions. Back in Reagan's administration, this tribunal was not even something that raised a lot of people's eyebrows, but we've learned a lot in the last 30 years, and one of the things we've learned is that these tribunals will be used by adversaries areas of the United States to limit our actions, to try and put international controls in effect over our national discretion, something we need to resist.
Yeah, very well said. And the fact that we are obliged under the terms of this treaty to engage in mandatory dispute resolution, either through these tribunals or through arbitration, which are also rigged games, is, as you say, a very dubious proposition.
It's a no-win proposition for the United States. And people say, but its objectives are laudable. So are the objectives of most international treaties. If that were the only test, God knows how many more we would have ratified. The issue is how it affects American national interest, not what its objectives are.
Amen. Mr. Ambassador, we have to let you go. Thank you so much for joining us. John Bolton, come back again soon if you would, please.
We want to know what you think. Leave your comments at 1-800-332-7131.
I was able to lose the 80 pounds I gained due to pregnancy. It was pretty easy to eat whatever I wanted and not think about it.
The Meta System from Judy Singer has been helping make weight loss easier for a quarter century.
My husband's grandmother used it 20 years ago to lose weight for a wedding and said it was the only way to go.
The Meta System also has an excellent support staff.
They were very supportive. The first time that I ordered the product, they called me and suggested that I order a lower dosage to begin with. They didn't want me to jump the gun right off the bat, and it was nice to know that they actually cared.
And the weight loss is so dramatic, people wonder.
With the Meta System, I've got many questions about how I managed raising a baby and working full-time and lose the weight and eat whatever I wanted.
People who use it recommend it.
I suggested the Meta System to my mother, and she has lost 30 pounds.
Learn more about weight loss with Judy Singer's The Meta System by calling 800-711-JUDY, 800-711-JUDY. The Meta System from Judy Singer, the powerful, all-natural way to lose weight, 800-711-JUDY.
The first step in winning a war is to know whom you're fighting. 9 years after 9/11, the U.S. security establishment has failed to tell us. The very words we need to describe the war are being outlawed. We went from the war on terror under Bush to the war on man-made disasters under Obama. Neither identifies the threat doctrine behind the aggression, Islamic Sharia law. That's why the Center for Security Policy assembled Team B, an independent group of national security professionals, including Bill Clinton's Director of Central Intelligence, James Woolsey. The result is a book that challenges the assumptions of the current administration and exposes the supremacist nature of Sharia and the jihad its adherents are obliged to engage in. This report names the names of those responsible and makes plain the mortal peril now posed to America's Constitution, our national security, and way of life. For more information, visit ShariaTheThreat.com or order your copy of Sharia, The Threat to America at Amazon.com.
Experts say there's no shortage of crude oil.
There really is no shortage of oil at the moment.
So why do gasoline prices keep going up?
There's all this fear that's out there, and that really goes a long way to making prices go up.
And home prices seem to be headed even lower.
We really aren't seeing any markets that are showing any sustained recovery at this point.
Now more than ever, is this a timeout or a double dip?
It could halt the economy's recovery in its tracks.
1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We're joined by Jim Lafferty. He heads the Virginia Anti-Sharia Task Force. He has been in the past an investigative journalist, a member of the congressional staff working for the Joint Economic Committee, and a partner in the Policy Communications Group in Northern Virginia. But we want to come to him in connection with some of the really important work that he and his colleagues in the Anti-Sharia Task Force in Virginia have been up to. Specifically, Jim, tell us what is the story with the Saudi Academy in your neck of the woods. What do we know about what goes on there, and what have you been trying to do to curb the threat that it seems to pose?
Frank, the Islamic Saudi Academy is operated by and is titled to the Saudi Embassy in Washington, D.C. It was founded in 1984. It basically teaches Sharia and manages the school using Sharia principles and has been a source of great, great concern for people who live here in Northern Virginia. It has had a star-studded faculty and student body of people who have engaged in all sorts of what we feel are criminal acts. The valedictorian.
Star-studded being a little bit of a euphemism in that condition then, right?
Well, it is. Basically, most people are familiar with some of the people who have come out of the Saudi Academy or been related to it in some way. And they've done some pretty substantial acts of terrorism and sabotage.
Or at least attempted to, right?
Well, on the sabotage front, at least. The valedictorian of one of their graduating classes plotted to kill President Bush and several senators. And he is now serving a life term in a federal prison for that. The financial officer at the Islamic Saudi Academy at one point was taking photographs of bridge supports like the ones on the Chesapeake Bay Bridge, a large span here in Washington. And clearly he's not an architecture hobbyist or something like that. He was taking them for specific purposes. But the Academy itself teaches from what Nina Shea and other people have demonstrated in their textbooks and in their daily teachings. They teach Sharia. They teach intolerance. They teach domination by Islam of all other ideologies and religions. And that is what has been going on there.
And you have, I know, been opposing efforts to expand the footprint of that school. Very quickly, where does that stand at the moment? Is it going forward, or have you been able to block it?
No, it's been stopped, and to a large extent, it's been stopped because the people here in Northern Virginia have just risen up in large numbers and told the political establishment here, no, we don't want this. We've had a lot of support from organizations like yours and from Glenn Beck and other people who've taken this up as a cause, but we have been able to stop its expansion. Now the idea is to take a closer look at how that school is operated and to attempt to get some of the law enforcement people to play a more active role in investigating it. In this administration, that's a very tough sell.
Indeed. We're speaking with Jim Lafferty of the Virginia Anti-Sharia Task Force. Jim, this has come to our attention afresh of late because a gentleman by the name of Mahmoud Hegab claims that he lost his top secret clearance because his wife went to this Islamic Saudi Academy, and apparently he is now, I gather, bringing a lawsuit against the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency on the grounds that there's been some sort of religious profiling brought to bear against him. What can you tell us about this story, and should there be reason for concern about having an individual who may have such ties, given what you've just told us, working with top-secret clearances in very sensitive national security agencies?
Well, I think there is great reason for concern. In my background, having worked at the U.S. Office of Personnel Management, I've seen how this system of granting clearances and doing background investigations works. And clearly, the role of a wife in organizations like this is a cause for concern. She not only attended 12 years at the Islamic Saudi Academy, but she had a role in several organizations with really questionable records and histories, like it was Islamic Relief USA, which is an affiliate of Islamic Relief Worldwide. All of these groups have been very pro-Palestinian and have operated against the interests of the United States, and have a very anti-Israel tenor to them.
And in some cases, at least I imagine, ties to the Muslim Brotherhood as well. Jim, I had neglected your time at the Office of Personnel Management. Let me just ask you a question about that, because we are told that some of the individuals who have been given security clearances therefore can't possibly constitute a problem in this respect. And yet I have been told, and I wondered if you've picked this up as well, that of late the backlog on these security clearances is such that people are being told who are in the processing, contractors who have been engaged to help with the processing of these background investigations, that they have a quota to meet, that it used to be 7 cases have to be processed every day. I'm told is maybe as many as 20 now. Have you picked up on this? And based on what you know, is there any chance that you could remotely be getting competent vetting of people with those kinds of constraints operating?
No, as a matter of fact, it's a situation that is very similar to what we faced in the 80s when we took over the Office of Personnel Management. And it was that people would do a sort of cursory background investigation and then just sort of wave people through. And when the new director at the Office of Personnel Management said, no, we're going to do a thorough background investigation and there's going to be no express lane for any of this, and that sounds like what needs to happen right now. It looks like they are just sort of rushing people through. And when they see something questionable, they adjudicate it and just say, look, it's no big deal. This guy is okay. Let him go. And they just pass him right through. And that's how we've ended up with some of the people that you and I have seen in the executive branch.
Especially, Jim Lafferty, if what you're finding is that where they may have questionable connections, it's to organizations that are deemed by the current administration as their partners in Muslim outreach, such as the Islamic Society of North America, one of the largest, in fact, the largest Muslim Brotherhood front in the United States. Jim, very quickly, we've got about a minute left. You have been following the case of an individual with somewhat dubious credentials, speaking of credentials, a fellow by the name of David Ramadan, who is now running for election in the House of Delegates in Virginia with the help of Grover Norquist. Our friend Ken Timmerman has written a very interesting and quite worrying piece about this in Front Page Magazine. What's the latest on the Ramadan affair?
Well, the latest is that with the registration, given the registration of the district, unfortunately, it looks like David Ramadan may win this seat. We've been attempting to organize third-party candidacies and things like that, all to no avail. And that would be very unfortunate here in Virginia. I mean, Virginia is still a pretty conservative state. And to have David Ramadan, who advocates for the Ground Zero Mosque and has been associated with a lobbying firm for Libya, as a member of the House of Delegates, that's tragic. The founding fathers, all of whom walked the same soil that we walk here in Virginia, would not have intended somebody like David Ramadan to be given that authority.
Yeah. I guess the most worrying thing to me is the extent to which it seems as though Republicans who have endorsed him have done so with a lot of money coming their way from him, from unclear sources. And I have the feeling this may prove to be a terrible embarrassment to them, as well as perhaps a liability for the country. Jim Lafferty, thank you for your insights in all of this. Thank you for the work you're doing at the Virginia Anti-Sharia Task Force. Keep it up. Keep coming back to us if you would. Next up, we'll be talking with Congressman Ed Royce about what we're finding at the moment is the problem with China. Straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Hey parents, finding it hard to communicate with kids in today's world of ever-changing slang?
Hi son.
Excuse me?
Introducing the Communicizer. Just strap non-toxic Communicizer to your mouth and go from boring old man speak.
Oh, you know, I'm here if you want to talk.
To 100% off the chain.
Text me with numbers, yo.
It's that easy.
Thanks to Communicizer, I'm relevant to my kids again. I mean, I'll fly, boo.
And now when you buy Communicizer, you get the auto-tune attachment free. Sounds so hip-hop, your kids will want to talk to you for hours.
I used to have to walk 3 miles uphill to school every morning, shorty.
I love you, Dad.
I love you too, son.
Communicizer is not available in stores because it doesn't exist. But that's okay. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Because kids in foster care don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUsKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
For decades, the Democratic Republic of Congo has endured economic collapse, poverty, and war. More than 3.5 million people have died in the conflict. Today, rebel forces continue to wreak havoc in the eastern Kivu provinces. The International Rescue Committee estimates that 30,000 children have been recruited as soldiers, and thousands more have lost their parents. Most of these children lack the most basic level of goods, security, and most especially, clean drinking water. Yet, there is a well of hope coming to eastern Congo in a village called Uvira. Washington, D.C.'s National Community Church is partnering with Global Outreach to bring a water pipeline to the Congo for Christ compound, an orphanage for children who have lost their parents to war and AIDS. Building a clean water source will sustain the school, provide for the children, and hundreds more in the village. Go to www.waterforcongo.com. Learn about the work of Global Outreach and give. You can be part of the community in Uvira, and like a well, you can be a source of hope in life. www.waterforcongo.com.
Hi, I'm Drew Brees, NFL quarterback for the New Orleans Saints, here with Bugs Bunny to remind you to get moving every day.
Because when you get moving an hour a day,
you fuel your body and your mind.
So what do you like to throw around the football like Drew?
Skateboard.
Play frisbee in the park.
Ride a bike.
Kick the soccer ball around.
Or dance in your room.
Just move it your way.
Because nothing makes you feel better than moving every day.
And that makes you part of a winning team.
So be a player.
You'll have more energy to do the things you like to do.
Move it your way and be a player.
Get up and play an hour a day, Doc. Check out how to be a player at letsmove.gov.
Head online to get tips on great ways to get moving every day.
That's right, at letsmove.gov. Let's hear that one more time, Doc. That's www.letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and HHS.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
I'm a champion. Realize Shaq's mechanism.
Hi, Shaquille O'Neal for Rad. This is not your normal PSA. Don't be stupid. Don't drink and drive. If you're going to go out and have a good time, it's fine. But designate a driver to drive home. Let's stop the madness. Don't drink and drive.
Public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Frank Effney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Effney.
We're back. I'm very pleased to say, joined once again by U.S. Congressman Ed Royce, who is currently in his 10th term. My God, I feel old, Ed Royce. That seems like so long ago. He represents the 40th District in California, Orange County, and he has been, in his time in the Congress, one of the most active and I think most respected individuals on its Foreign Affairs Committee. He also serves on the Financial Services Committee. He is currently the chairman of the Subcommittee on Terrorism, Nonproliferation, and Trade, which means that he is right in the middle of issues that we address here at Secure Freedom Radio all the time. And it's great to have you with us, Congressman. Thank you for your service, and thank you for coming back to us.
Thank you, Frank.
I'd really like to start with an issue that is very much in the news at the moment, and that I know you've been following, given your portfolio in the terrorism and nonproliferation business, namely Pakistan. We're hearing about the prosecution of a man who allegedly gave some assistance to the CIA in finding and confirming that Osama bin Laden was indeed holed up in a seemingly protected location in Pakistan. What does this tell us about the Pakistani government and where we're likely to go from here as we draw down forces in Afghanistan particularly?
Well, I'll share with you, Frank, I've been in Pakistan three times in the last 3 years, and every time that we go into that country, the situation is worse on the ground. The cooperation is lessening. The influence of the Islamist militants continue to expand. Of course, that's why we've had 180 Predator drone strikes carried out and over 1,000 militants killed there. We do not have the support of the ISI, of the intelligence community in Pakistan, on going after some of the high-level terrorists that we're looking for, especially those that are operating against our troops in Afghanistan, as well as, of course, against India. And so, as an alternative, we're using these drone attacks in order to eliminate or try to contain this threat. But it shows you the nature of this problem, and it's not going to get better as long as those Deobindi schools, some of the most radical of
the madrasas
that bring up the next generation of young jihadists, until those are shut down, they've got a ready recruiting network, don't they?
It's a whole pipeline. Just on this question of the doctor, and without getting into any question of whether he actually provided the help that he's alleged of providing,
what does it say,
not just to us, but to the people of Pakistan, that someone is being prosecuted for helping the United States, if indeed that's what he did?
Right, and I think the message it sends is as clear as the message of taking our downed helicopter that was utilized in the attack and shipping that off in a crate to China so that they can study our technology that we utilized in
stealthy
going in
stealthy technology.
Out.
Yeah,
exactly. Every message, as you're pointing out, what is the messaging coming out of this? What is the messaging to the people of Pakistan? And frankly, what's our takeaway from this? Well, I think what you can see is, as I indicated, we are not getting cooperation, far from it. And as a consequence, the intelligence services in that country clearly are a big part of the problem in terms of the instability that's being created, and the preparation and transferring the wherewithal to terrorists like those that carried out the attack on Mumbai. You know, you can see the very real cost to the West and to Pakistan's neighbors in their willingness to not cooperate. And this is one more example of it.
It's unfortunately, as you say, getting worse. The implications of that for one of the other areas of your responsibilities, Congressman Ed Royce, on the House Foreign Affairs Committee's Subcommittee on Terrorism, Nonproliferation, and Trade, is the proliferation piece of this. We talk often, amongst ourselves at least, about the dangers of nuclear weapons in the Pakistanis' arsenal, some estimate as many as perhaps 100 of them now, migrating into the hands of people that the ISI at the very least works with, if not is populated by, namely, Islamists, Sharia-adherent folks who would love to bring such weapons to bear against, Israel, perhaps against us, who knows. How do you see that particular problem against the backdrop of what you've just said of the worsening of the situation in Pakistan?
Well, I think it's best summed up by a quote some years ago that you and I noticed at the time, but I believe it was the foreign minister of Pakistan who, when they developed that capability, that atomic capability, with that test, announced not that Pakistan had the bomb, but said Islam has the bomb. And that, again, in terms of a message, that doesn't speak to the ambitions of a nation trying to defend, its sovereignty. It's not a perception that, well, Pakistan now has the bomb. It's this, why make that statement? Why telegraph that message? And of course, this is our concern, is the number of warheads in inventory, the question about whether or not they can properly monitor those at this point in time, and of course the deeper question, if the instability continues to grow in the country, if the graduates of these Deobindi schools continue to expand upheaval that's going on internally, and many of the areas where I could originally go in the country 3 years ago, I certainly can't go today because they're frankly under the dominion now of radical, militants. And so this is the question for our policymakers in the future, and this is why we're trying to send the message to the Pakistan government that you yourselves are eventually going to be consumed by what's been unleashed partly by the intelligence services, in our opinion.
Right, and I guess partly by going back to former President Zia in his day. Let me turn to another topic before we run out of time with you, Congressman Ed Royce. You mentioned drone strikes. You mentioned how many of them have been used with lethal effect, salutary lethal effect at that, in Pakistan. We've, of course, also very recently had one take down Anwar al-Awlaki, one of the most dangerous men, arguably, operating in the al-Qaeda network outside of that region. Yeah. Let's just talk about the argument we're now hearing from some that this was an extrajudicial assassination of an American citizen. Where do you come down on that, and what would you say about the need to use such technologies there and elsewhere, perhaps, in the future?
Well, I think the court has spoken in the past very concisely on this subject. They made the argument, unlike the ACLU that's driving this case, that filed the formal lawsuit on behalf of Awlaki's father, that sought to halt what it claimed was an illegal U.S. government assassination. But the court said 6 years ago in the Nazi saboteur case, they said citizenship in the United States of an enemy belligerent does not relieve him from the consequences of belligerency. So last December, we had the court dismiss the lawsuit brought forward on this case, on the al-Awlaki case, under the political question doctrine, which requires judges to step aside on issues that should be resolved, by
the political bodies,
the elected branches and political branches, right, of government. So I think it's very straightforward. I mean, you have an individual here who has repeatedly tried to kill us. The Fort Hood shootings were his handiwork. The would-be Times Square car bomber was inspired by him. He was behind the Christmas Day underwear bomber and also a number of attacks in Britain and in Canada. The Canadians who wanted to attack Parliament and behead their prime minister were inspired by
his
him. The politician in Britain who was stabbed again. The woman was radicalized listening to him. So, I think we have a pretty clear case. I imagine if you tallied it all up, you'd have since 9/11. I think he was responsible for more terror attacks, inspiring more of them that killed Americans probably than anyone else.
Yeah, a man at war with us.
He's an American himself.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
American himself.
Traitor and now deceased. Thanks be to God. Ed Royce, we thank God for your service to our country and for your joining us from time to time. I hope you'll do so again soon. Keep up the good work, sir, and we'll look forward to talking with you in the near future.
Next up, Gordon Chang with his update on Asia, what's happening there and in Washington this week, and what it might mean for all of us. Straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
I went from a size 18 down to a size 5, and I was able to keep it off.
Angie had some serious challenges.
I had gone through a divorce and put on quite a bit of weight. There was an accident where I was put on a lot of medications, and I put on over 60 pounds. I tried every kind of diet, but diets just did not work.
Diets don't work is something they hear a lot over at the MetaSystem from Judy Singer.
I heard about Judy Singer's MetaSystem, and I thought, well, couldn't hurt to call, and I called them up, and they told me all about the product, and I thought, well, I'll give it a try. From the first week that I was on it, I wasn't hungry a lot, and it was just amazing. Jumping about 3 months ahead, I dropped 63 pounds.
If you're ready for a natural product that cleanses your system and helps you lose fat, talk to a Judy Singer counselor about the Metasystem. Call 1-800-711-JUDY. 1-800-711-JUDY. The Metasystem from Judy Singer. Powerful, all-natural weight loss. 1-800-711-JUDY.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have held the same mirror for 13 years.
I have been decorated with purple dinosaurs, baseball teams, and football helmets.
I have witnessed 33 Thanksgiving dinners and one wedding proposal.
I have tiny notches marking the growth of three children.
I have caused a learning disability.
I am the reason that a fifth grader simply can't sit still.
I am responsible for a five-year-old's rage.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home is built before 1978, your family could be at risk. Let's make all kids lead-free kids. Log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
I am the reason a child has trouble hearing.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Dennis Prager thinks there should be a simple standard to textbooks.
I'll tell you how I think a textbook should be written. This is what happened, period.
That is the role of the text.
And if nearly everybody who did something important in American history, if 78.9% of them were WASP males, then I want 78.9% of the textbook to reflect that fact.
I care about truth.
That's why I'm not on the left.
The Dennis Prager Show. Weeknights at 10 on 1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. I felt a little out of place, but it turns out I wasn't alone.
At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of OIF and OEF vets who've got your back here, just like they did over there. So now, I'm never alone. I can get the resources I need and talk to tons of people who understand where I'm coming from.
Whether it's navigating the GI Bill
or VA hospitals,
managing the transition home, or meeting people you can share stories with,
you'll find it at IAVA.org. Even if it's just everyday stuff,
like getting tips on where to find a nice sweater for my dog.
Did he just say that?
Really?
What?
Okay, maybe not that, but everything else. No matter where you are, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We got your back.
Brought to you by Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom, it's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back, joined by Gordon Chang, as we are happily each week, with a real expert's view of what is going on in Asia at the moment, and as it happens, here in Washington, which bears directly on what is happening and what will happen in Asia. Gordon, great to have you with us, as always. Thanks for the time.
Thank you, Frank.
There are several things taking place this week in Washington. Let's start with one that has a lot of people quite anxious, namely the Senate bill that would impose sanctions on China for its currency manipulation. Tell us what the impetus behind this is and whether you think this bill is advisable and what its prospects are.
the prospects are very good in the Senate. In the House, they're troubled because Speaker Boehner has called the bill dangerous. However, there is momentum to do something about China, and so the bill could actually squeak by the House with a certain amount of Republican support. The real impetus here is that we've been talking to the Chinese about their currency policies for about a decade, and China's currency is still undervalued somewhere between 25% to 40%, giving China's exporters an enormous advantage over American businesses. Eventually, something's got to give. There's these two large imbalances in the world, the Chinese current account surplus and the American current account deficit. The Chinese, through their currency policies, are trying to force the adjustment on us, in other words, to make us suffer the pain. And this currency bill is an attempt to sort of right the balance so that the world can adjust normally through the markets. I think this bill is enormously important, and it's going to be a good thing because other tactics to try to get the Chinese to be cooperative have not worked.
Gordon Chang, some have said that this bill lacks teeth. Do you think that it actually does give the president, assuming he is prepared to sign it into law, assuming the Congress, the full Congress enacts it, that it will really translate into a significant instrument for countering what the Chinese, as you say, have been doing for a decade in the currency manipulation sphere?
There are many provisions of this bill. One of them is especially important, and that is countervailing duties. This makes it easier for American workers and businesses to go to the Commerce Department to get countervailing duties, which are meant to countervail the effect of Chinese subsidies. And in this case, the currency policy in Beijing is a subsidy. So essentially, this can do some important things. This is not the only thing that we should be doing, because China has many other policies that are predatory, but this is a good start, and it's a show of will, because if the Chinese think that we're serious about currency, they'll get serious themselves about trying to do things a little bit fairer than they have in the past. China has these mercantilist policies, and that's the reason why the recovery in the U.S. has been so anemic. It should have been much stronger, as Chairman Bernanke of the Federal Reserve said a couple days ago, and the reason is because China has been preventing really the recovery in the United States.
Gordon Chang, that sounds like perhaps the best case. What if it turns out Speaker Boehner is right, that it's a dangerous piece of legislation? Do you see the likelihood that there will be a trade war precipitated should the United States government adopt this this policy?
It's impossible to precipitate a trade war because the Chinese are already waging one against us. The only issue is how we're going to respond. You got to remember, they've got the surplus, we've got the deficit. In a trade war, deficit countries always win, especially advanced economies. I can't think of a situation in history where an advanced economy has done poorly in a trade war. So yes, this bill is extremely dangerous. It's extremely dangerous to the Chinese. For us, it's beneficial.
Well, we will be watching closely what comes of these deliberations with you, Gordon Chang, Fox News and Forbes.com, also World Affairs, and, of course, here at Secure Freedom Radio. One other development that will be taking place with broad implications for Asia, perhaps, and certainly for us. In Washington this week, the South Korean president is expected to be in town when the Congress approves a trade pact with South Korea, long in the making. Is it, in fact, going to go down as a positive thing, Gordon Chang, would you say, or are we going to see more difficulties with our important strategic ally and trading partner, South Korea?
I think the trade pact with South Korea will go through. It's not a sure thing, of course, but the reason why it hasn't been submitted to Congress for a very long period was that President Obama was working out a number of issues, not only with this trade pact, but with other related trade matters. And so I think essentially the president has worked those out with Congress, both Republicans and Democrats. This is an important thing because we have a strategic alliance with South Korea. If we're going to contain the Chinese in Asia, we're going to have the South Koreans help. And right now, the South Korean economy is reorienting itself towards China. China is South Korea's largest trading partner. So the South Koreans have signed a free trade agreement with Europe. We're going to be left behind. This is, you know, in South Korea, an industrialized economy. We have one as well. So a trade pact is appropriate. It's not like where we're having a trade pact with Mexico or other countries, which basically have at a much lower level of development. So this one, I think, is appropriate, and I think it will go through Congress, and it's a good thing.
One of the other agenda items, Gordon Chang, that is likely to be on the agenda for the conversations between President Obama and his South Korean counterpart this week will be what to do about North Korea's nuclear programs. You are, of course, the author of Nuclear Showdown, North Korea Takes on the World. What do you expect to come out of the summit in that space, and will it make any difference to North Korea's abiding nuclear abilities and ambitions?
President Obama will talk with President Lee about the six-party talks, which have been stalled. Right now, China is trying to get them started because it wants to give North Korea aid, and it wants to give them some more time. And basically, China wants the rest of the world to provide that in order to help the North Koreans become even more of a threat. President Obama has been suspicious of the six-party talks, but he has been willing to talk to the Chinese about restarting them. And I hope that he does not put pressure on President Lee to get these going again, because these only work to undermine peace and stability in North Asia.
Yeah. You know, I'm struck, Gordon Chang, as we speak, the 20th anniversary of Reykjavik is being celebrated. We're going to be hearing much from such eminences as former Secretaries of State George Shultz and James Baker about the need to realize the global elimination of nuclear weapons. Knowing what you know about North Korea and its ambitions, and for that matter, the alliances that it has built around sharing technology related to nuclear weapons and their delivery systems with the likes of Iran and Syria. Is there any prospect that this will actually translate, this initiative, this desire of the president, as well as these other worthies, translate into a nuclear-free world or even a safer one with some nuclear weapons?
The world cannot transition to a low nuke world if North Korea is proliferating nuclear weapons technology with China's assistance to Iran, Syria, and perhaps other dangerous regimes. If people want to celebrate Reykjavik, that's a great thing. But on the other hand, first things first. And the first thing that we've got to do is we've got to stop North Korea. We've got to stop Iran. Only then can we start to talk about broader issues, because you can't have a nuclear-free world with China as the master proliferator.
Yeah. Gordon Chang, I had a small part in the Reykjavik summit and remember vividly President Reagan standing up to Mikhail Gorbachev. And I think were he alive today, he would be standing up to these characters as well, saying, wait a minute, I love the idea of a nuclear-free world in the long term, but I'll be damned if we're going to do it or even try to advance it by unilaterally disarming the United States from its nuclear capabilities. Gordon, your insights in both how others are thinking and how we ought to behave are deeply appreciated, as always. It's great to have you with us, and I look forward to visiting with you again next week. I hope all of you will be with us then. And for that matter, I hope you'll all be with us again tomorrow. Same time, same station, for more of what you absolutely need to know to secure your freedom and that of those you love. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks so much for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.